You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_data. Well, the Green Bay Packers finally did stuff, man. It is so exciting. Now, is it maybe not the most important thing in the world? Yeah, sure, but you know what? We got to see, if you were on social media, our rookies running around doing stuff, man. And I know it's going to sound ridiculous saying some guys look good, but I mean, we've seen guys run around in shorts long enough that you kind of can gauge some stuff. Plus, I can compare it to the other guys that are there. And I had essentially two positive observations, one somewhat negative observation, and some, I guess, neutral ones. But I just want to kind of go through the news today, some comments from Matt LaFleur, some of the stuff that was observed, et cetera, et cetera. First of all, for those of you that care, apparently Michael Irvin was booted from NFL Network. I don't have any details on what exactly happened, but he is officially out. And then on top of that, the show, Total Access, NFL Total Access, apparently has been canceled. Now, I'm not going to praise that because I'm not happy about people losing their jobs, but I didn't really watch the show. I'm sure we got some good content out of it. I hope that they replace it with something else that I can find clips of and make fun of and have some fun with, but that was an interesting little thing to find out this morning. In addition, Mr. Kotan Oladapo, I'll just say Dapo because everyone says Dapo, said he had surgery on his left big toe recently and is out for the offseason workout, but he expects to be ready for training camp. He suffered a stress fracture doing drills on the turf at the combine and powered through more drills at his pro day. So this is actually information that we had been fed, compliments of apparently Oladapo and JJ being best friends. I don't know how the heck that happened, but I didn't want to say anything about it because it's not something that he wanted people to know. But now that he told Tom Silverstein and everybody knows, now you know. As far as who is there today, it's a very, very big list, but I happen to have that list. In order of jersey numbers, we got Porter Wilson, the punter, Jacob Eason out of Washington, the quarterback, Michael Pratt, Alex McNulty, the kicker, Rory Starkey, wide receiver out of Samford, Javon Bullard, Tyler Cole, safety, Kotan Oladapo, safety, Don Callis, cornerback, Marshawn Lloyd, Evan Williams, Kalen King, Jarvion Howard, running back, Ellis Merriweather, running back, Kalen Gervin, corner, Anthony Johnson, corner, Jermon Green, corner, Messiah Swinson, tight end, Henry Pearson, the fullback, is there, Raylan Goforth, we talked about, Devin Garrison, tight end, Christian Young, linebacker, DeAndre Johnson, defensive line, Peter Bowden is the long snapper out of Wisconsin, Deslin Alexander, defensive line, Logan Blake, linebacker, Keyshawn Banks, defensive lineman, Chris Russell, linebacker, Edgerrin Cooper, Tyron Hopper, also linebackers, obviously, Michael Furtney, offensive line, Rodney Matthews, defensive line, Lectus Smith, offensive line, Jack Daly, defensive line, Jake Monk, offensive line, Roj Stona, defensive line. It is Stona, see? I thought so. James Esther, defensive line, Donovan Jennings, offensive line, Trent Jones, offensive line, Kadeem Telford, tackle. Jordan Morgan is there, Travis Glover, offensive lineman, Brian Hightower, and Julian Hicks are wide receivers. Joel Wilson's a tight end. Dimitri Stanley, Drew Dixon, Grant DeBose, Caden Davis, all wide receivers, and Kenneth Odemegwu listed as a defensive lineman. It's a lot of guys. It is 50 total players. 11 of them are draft picks. 8 of them are undrafted free agents. 18 are tryout players, and 13 are current players. So I don't know the rules on that. As far as, I'm guessing you can have 50 players because they have exactly 50. It's an odd number. But the rules on just bringing in free agents, I guess. I don't know. By the way, if you've been around long enough, you know the way that the easiest way for me to do this is just to go in chronological order. So some things may seem kind of like all over the place. It is what it is. So first of all, there was some locker room interviews. I'm not going to play it because it's like a 5-second clip that you can barely hear. But Jordan Morgan said he was playing left tackle. Pretty sure that was the entire time. Now, we can call that significant, but I don't think it is. I mean, look, the bottom line is you drafted a guy that is a left tackle, that expects to be a left tackle. He's a first-round pick. Ideally, he's a left tackle. You're not going to just throw him at guard. You're going to put him out there. You're going to say, you know, you're the guy. I mean, if we draft you in the first round, you're the dude. You're expected to win this job. And it's basically Rashid's to win over, right? However, there's also another angle of this, and that is the team isn't there. I mean, the guys are there somewhere, but, you know, when it's the rookies going out, he's not taking Rashid's job because Rashid isn't there. So, you know, and Matt LaFleur has already said, you know, we're going to be trying different stuff. We're going to move people around. And of course, everyone's going to massively react. The first time we see him kicked inside, it's going to be, oh, he lost his job. Mark my words, that'll happen. First round pick's a bust. Way to go, Goo. Oladapo apparently is motoring around on a little scooter. He's in a boot. So that's going to be a scene. It's going to be an unfortunate scene. I mean, nobody likes to see a draft pick walking around in a boot. But the bottom line is, it's just a visual. It doesn't mean anything. He's not going to practice, which sucks. We're not going to see him running around. But he'll be ready to rock and roll. Now, I will say that drastically hurts his chances of being on the field when you've got, you know, two guys ahead of you that are safeties. You know, granted, somebody could play in the slot, but even still, you're competing with a guy, and that guy's been practicing all the way through, and you're trying to just get on the field. You know, I don't know the exact timeline, but if we're talking week one-ish, I don't think so. I don't know if he plays year one at all, but we'll see. I'm not trying to be all doom and gloom about it. When he was asked about it, he said, I'm trying to show I'm a true left tackle and show I can be out there on the edge and protect quarterback. Talking about his shorter arms, he says, I get that a lot, the short arm stuff. It's like, y'all obviously haven't watched film. I use them pretty well. I move people off the ball. I pass set pretty well, protect the quarterback. It doesn't bother me. I'm just proving everybody wrong. Good. Good for him. Javon Bullard dropped a line, I can't fake the funk. So we got to make a song out of that for sure. Try to remember to have it at the end of this. Obviously, it's going to be a funk song. I want to do highlight videos. So I want to do, you know, like Oladapo. As stupid as it is, it's just going to be Home Depot. Dun, 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 dun. And he's going to be laying people out. But some of the other guys would like to create songs. And Bullard's going to be a funk song called Can't Fake the Funk. I'm sure everybody's going to have a t-shirt about that pretty soon. Kalen King, when they talked to him, seventh-round cornerback Kalen King, this is from Kyle Malzahn, said, Jaire Alexander is someone he watched a lot of film on, and he's excited to learn from him on Green Bay's defense. Said, Jaire reminds King of himself. He just approaches everything like a dog. He's just a dog. I like dogs. I think that's 100% correct. Jaire is just borderline unnecessarily physical. And I think, I've told you, when I watch Kalen King, he wants to be in your face all day long. He's out there fist fighting. You know, wide receivers just trying to get around him. He's just throwing hands. You know, the biggest issue I had with Kalen King, he grabs a little too much and for a little bit too long, but he does not want to get out of your face. Ryan Wood says, Kalen King knew Carrington Valentine since before the Packers drafted him, so he's aware of his story as a seventh-round cornerback who earned a role as a rookie. Just like King wants after falling to the seventh round. Quote, it shows that it can be done, King said. I got plans on being a Green Bay Packer. Man, I'm turning into Jacob here. Jacob is supposed to be the guy that's like, I'm telling you, this guy can do it. And I'm like, he's a seventh rounder. I'm so tired of hearing this. Like, he's not going to do it. Man, I'm watching Kalen King, and I'm like, this guy's freaking good, man. I like him. I really like him. But I can't do it. That's Jacob's shtick. So I got to sit back and be like, nah, bro, nah. Kalen King, also at his locker, says, was the longest 3 days of my life, the most stressful 3 days of my life, the most emotional 3 days of my life. I'll never forget that feeling, and I feel like that's only going to make me go harder. And that is crazy. I mean, you think Kalen King, man, you know, after that 2022 season, he was going to be like an early first rounder. We wouldn't have even been able to get him in the first round. He was supposed to go so early. And now he's seriously sitting here thinking, I might go undrafted. And he fell. I mean, he didn't just fall to the seventh round. We were what, 4 picks from being done? Something like that. I mean, we were way at the back. And then he gets the call. I mean, that has to be stressful and also really upsetting. I mean, it's a lot of money he lost. It's a lot of money. And, you know, it's a much harder climb. If he's a first-round pick, he starts day one. Now, the assumption is he will not start. Matt Schneidman said, multiple rookies said Jordan Love reached out to them after they got drafted. Javon Bullard, quote, having QB1 reach out to you, hit your phone, it's huge. I don't take that lightly, man. Just the fact that he actually reached out because he didn't have to do that, just hats off to him for that. I respect him for that just alone. I do love that. I mean, it's such a great young culture. We talk about this all the time, but I just feel like this is a really young and hungry group. And so, that's the thing that was so hard before. And this is not an Aaron Rodgers knock or anything like that. I think there is like this, it's not even necessarily generational. You get these older guys that are in their final years of their final contracts. They, you know, the whole like getting hyped up and like, oh, we're going to do it. They just kind of roll their eyes. Like, I've been through this 1,000 times. It's a business. And I got a job and I'm going to do my, and of course I want to win, but this is routine. I've been doing this for 10 years, man, 15 years, whatever. And it started to feel, I don't want to say stale, but kind of, you know, it kind of crushes that spirit. Now it's all just young guys. They run the show. And so when you come in, it's just a bunch of young, hungry guys that were just in college a little while ago talking about, we're going to take over the NFL. It's great that they all can have that same kind of energy. Now, that's going to change at some point. Jordan Love's about to get paid. Some of these guys are going to start to get paid. I'm hoping that the hunger doesn't fade, but you figure 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years, Jordan starts to turn into that other type of guy where it's like, okay, here comes another crop. Got to get them up to speed again, for crying out loud. Bunch of freaking morons. But no, this is a good thing, and I'm excited about it. There's another really cool story about Jordan Love and just sort of the leadership and the respect that he's garnered, you know, the fact that he's even kind of well-known. Jordan Morgan, he met Jordan Love when he came into the building. He said, when I looked at him, I kind of just froze like, oh, that's Jordan Love. Brandon Kennard goes on to say, Packers first-round pick Jordan Morgan was semi-starstruck when he met his new quarterback. He says he watched the Packers-Cowboys playoff game and is excited to join an exciting young offense. And that is cool. I mean, look, I mean, some of these guys, they don't really watch football. They don't really follow it. They don't know much, especially about Green Bay. Some of these guys, though, they're locked in. And if they watched and they actually, and I don't know why you wouldn't, if you're projected to go into the NFL next year, you want to see what these teams are doing. If you watch that Dallas and Packers game, man, you realize like this is one of the youngest and hottest teams coming up in the NFL. It's just a crew of like 24-year-olds that are just on the upswing. That's got to be exciting. Wes Hodkowitz goes on to quote him a little bit further, Jordan Morgan saying, I followed the breakout. I saw when that happened, and that's really special for him. Everybody loves him here, obviously, and I want to be that one tackle to protect him. I mean, that's such a cool thing, man. It just is. And I know sometimes people just say things to say things, but I don't think so. This isn't coach speak. This isn't trained up talking. This is a guy that actually watched. I mean, he's talking about what we all know. There was a moment where it clicked, his breakout. And he said, I watched it. I watched that happen. It was crazy. And he's like, I want to be, he's hungry for it. I want to be that guy. Like, you know, all 5 guys, their job is to protect the quarterback. That's their number one thing. You go to war with your quarterback. But the left tackle, that's like the guy. You know, the center's making the calls and da-da-da-da. And right and left might not be as big of a deal as it used to be because the pass rushers are on both sides now. But it's still a prestigious place to be. And you've got this quarterback that you watched that broke out and you've got an opportunity to be his left tackle. That's such a cool thing. Also, interesting little side note, Malachi Corley was drafted by the Jets. He started texting Aaron Rodgers. Apparently, Aaron Rodgers invited him to stay at his guest house. So he is a changed man, I'll tell you that. From the days of I'm effing tired of these young guys and I just don't want to deal with their BS anymore, They just need to get on my page or get out of my way to like going to games and hanging out and now inviting people to essentially live with him. That, can you imagine that? You're a rookie and Rodgers texts you and you're like, this is a, I can't believe one of the greatest of all time. I'm talking to him. He's my quarterback now. And he invites you to stay at his guest house. First of all, you better say yes immediately. But that's crazy. I was thinking about it too. I am actually really excited now that we have no real relation with the Jets. We don't need them to lose games. We have no draft picks or anything. I really hope he can stay healthy. Last year, I just didn't. I think I was a little bit still pissed off about everything. Obviously, didn't want him to get hurt. I just didn't want it to be a wild success. But I'm excited, man. I want them to get in the mix. I hope that they're kind of a strong AFC team. Obviously, I would rather them not win the Super Bowl than us if that were even an option. But if they can come in and just beat the crap out of, like, you know, the Chiefs or any of these other AFC teams that are just causing problems, I wouldn't mind it. And hey, Packers-Jets Super Bowl would be the absolute best possible thing, assuming we win, you know. But even if they did, which obviously would be crushing and suck, there would be kind of an element of, you know, good for Rodgers. He needed to get one more. It sucks it wasn't with us. And then sort of in a weird, awkward kind of way, passing on the torch, you know. Packers got into the playoffs, look real good. The next year they go to the Super Bowl, couldn't quite get over the hump with Aaron Rodgers, but it's on now. Plus Rodgers probably retires after that and we move on. And I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. I was thinking about it, and instead of just being pissed and hoping the Jets fail, I'm looking at it now a little bit different. And I'm very hopeful that Rodgers can stay healthy and that these idiots can actually build an offensive line. And we get to watch Rodgers this year. I'm kind of excited about it. Anyways, why don't we take our first break? When we come back, I want to play maybe my favorite quote of the entire day. I'm actually going to play this one. It's from rookie running back Marshawn Lloyd, who I'm beginning to get much more excited about. He looked unbelievable, in my opinion, when I saw him. Again, I understand we're talking running in shorts and all that kind of stuff, but it's just one of those things you kind of notice. But I think it just flows perfectly with what I've been talking about this whole time. By the way, 305 Mike McGee and Eli from Duluth, I got to hear from you. I was going to try to scour the earth to find you, but then I thought, you know, if you're not listening to the podcast, that's kind of a knock. So I'm going to give it a day or two, and then we're going to move on down the line because we actually have two people that came in second place. And I know for a fact one of them is going to hear this. The other one, I don't know who that is, but maybe. So I'm going to give you a day or two. Jamie 1010 has already reached out. We've got two more sitting out there. So 305 Mike McGee and Eli from Duluth. I'll give you like two more days, and then we're going to move on down. I won't say the names because I don't want them to be disappointed when they find out they almost had it. But that's what you get. And then we're going to move on down the line because I don't want to keep Fogo waiting. Very, very generous with their offers. $125 gift cards to Fogo de Chão. And I don't know that it gets much better than that. So, and they did actually were nice enough to offer to allow me and a guest to go. So maybe I'll see you there. Anyways, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing. But they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built for us. In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We get all hyped up thinking we're going to get some high-value Jordan Love card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view on all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now when I buy Slab Packs on Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And honestly, the best thing for me and my son is the fact that we're kind of novices into this. When I walk into a card shop with my son, and a card says it costs $40, kind of just taking his word for it that that's a good value. So I appreciate the transparency on grading, as well as just getting excited about seeing what you could potentially get. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/packdaddy. Wow, that's crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's $40 right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/packdaddy for 10% off your first purchase.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, I'm going to play this for you. I want you to listen very closely to what he's got to say. It's from the Green Bay Packers, so there's some background music and all that kind of annoying stuff, but I thought this was fantastic.
It's been good, just being able to be in the NFL and, you know, lifelong dream come true. We're a young offense. We're young. Like, we did so good. We were, like, one of the youngest teams last year that were able to go as far as they did, and we're a year older. The teams are a year older. We got a couple more young guys coming up. I think we have a chance to be special for quite some time. Honestly, I was not expecting, you know, to be here. I was definitely not. And when I got the call, the first thing I thought of was, like, Super Bowl, instantly. Because I'm like, this is insane. Just seeing exactly what they did last year and how great the team has been, you know, just from, you know, the change and everything. I think this team is upwards going up for sure.
So, again, another guy that was plugged in. He knows about the Packers. He watched it happen. As soon as he got the call from the Green Bay Packers, he's thinking, holy crap. Like, this is a playoff team. This is Super Bowl. We're doing this. I love that. My favorite part, though, is not only does he say we, which makes sense, but I mean, it's just, not only is it we as in it's, he's taken ownership of the team. He says we talking about last year. We were one of the youngest teams last year. We were so, I freaking love that. So you were on the team last year. Dude, that is your team. Last year, whatever, you're a Packer. This is now your history, your heritage. And this is your team. We were the youngest team last year, and we did this last year, and we're going to do this going forward. I mean, he acts like he's been here for 10 years. He's even talking about, yeah, we brought in some new young guys this year. Like, bro, you're one of the new young guys. What are you talking about? He's locked in, man. I love it. I love it. I mean, it's a really rare thing, and I think it's going to come with some bumps along the way, having a lot of young guys, having new schemes, having all this stuff. But there is a really rare and unique opportunity to have just these young, excited people come in and just have this kind of energy. By the way, I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast or not. I kind of glossed over, or I didn't mention it because I thought I already did. Alex Magoo is officially being moved over to wide receiver. If I didn't mention that, now I did. I mean, I think it's painfully obvious why they did that. They just drafted another quarterback. They're not getting rid of either of the three top quarterbacks that they now have. Magoo is on the outs. He cannot win a top three job. And essentially, it's starting quarterback, backup quarterback, and then practice squad quarterback, which is most likely going to be Pratt this year. So what do you do with Magoo? Well, apparently, according to Matt LaFleur anyways, Magoo, being an extremely athletic guy, has already been in scout team running wide receiver and tight end routes and stuff in the scouting team. So basically, it's we can either cut him because we're wasting his time, or we can try to get him to switch positions, see if he's willing to do it, and see if he can possibly win a spot. Now, it's beyond a long shot, and it's probably not great for Magoo, because if you want to be a quarterback, just say no, let him cut you, and then see if somebody else will pick you up as a quarterback. If you decide now you're going to be running around as a wide receiver, I just feel like it hurts your chances. Not that your chances are very good to begin with, but whatever, we'll see. The signings have begun. Packers signed 7th-round picks quarterback Michael Pratt and cornerback Kalen King. 2 down, 9 to go. Usually there's no issue with this. The first-round pick, I think last year, like Lucas Van Ness, it took quite a while to get him signed. But I don't know why everybody makes a big deal out of this. Like, oh, they got signed. They signed him. It's amazing. They didn't sign. What's going to happen? Like, nobody's going to hold out for the season. These guys need money. Wes Hodkowitz says, new strength coach Aaron Hill running the Packers players through stretch prior to today's rookie camp. 5th-round pick, Oladapo, et cetera, et cetera. You already understand that. But it is interesting. We got the new guy, Aaron Hill, out there. And again, I think a lot of that had to do with people just really didn't like the last guy. And Brian Gutekunst understanding, or, you know, Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst kind of together understanding that culture is very important and we can't have this toxic culture. We can't have a group of guys that it becomes sort of an us versus them. So they needed a new person in there. Andy Herman notes that the warmups were different for different players. The big guys in back warming up differently than the skill guys, which is interesting. I don't know if that's how they usually do it or if this is part of that whole process of trying to limit injuries. I know they've done a ton of work into looking into this, especially with guys like Watson and whatnot, and the strain that they put on their body, which is a different strain than the big guys. You know, it's not as much sort of, you know, you think Christian Watson is putting full force and massive amounts of energy into speed down the field, which is different what the big guys are doing. So we'll see. We'll see if this materializes anything or if this is just friggin' voodoo science. Offensive line. Jordan Morgan, left tackle. Donovan Jennings, left guard. They put Jacob Monk at center. Travis Glover lining up at right tackle. Once again, we don't have a right guard. But also interesting, Monk's going right to center. Again, that's one of those things where you look at it and say, this is what he is, but this is where our need is, so I wonder if they're going to move him, right? We have a left tackle, but he probably should be inside, so says some people. So he's probably going to be a guard. And Jacob Monk, he's a center, but he'll probably be a guard. Well, the left tackle's the left tackle's the center of the center. We'll see how that shakes up, but it sounds like Jacob Monk right now is working toward being the backup center and possibly overtaking Myers by next year, unless he's just dominant this year. No idea what the plan at right guard is. I will say, since now the notes are kind of getting into when they're doing their warm-ups and stuff, I really thought Jordan Morgan moved really well. Very fast, very smooth. I think Monk looked a little clunky. I mean, he's a bigger interior guy, and maybe it's just sort of the footwork thing he's trying to get used to, but Morgan just looks so smooth and fast and just glides, and that's not exactly what I saw with Monk, but doesn't necessarily mean anything, just an observation. Then they got to a drill where essentially the linebacker has to engage with a blocker, disengage, and then go make a tackle. And the difference between Cooper and Hopper was unbelievable. Not that I necessarily think Tyron Hopper did anything wrong. He did the drill, but I wish there was a way I could explain this through audio to you. And if you've seen the video, I mean, Andy Herman posted a side-by-side of Cooper and Hopper with donuts, is what it's called. Cooper and Hopper with donuts. You can search that. It's the and sign, not A-N-D. But Hopper just kind of did the drill. You know, you push up high and then kind of disengage and then go get the tackle. Cooper about dislocated this man's arms. He shot him up so hard his head jerked back, and then he ripped the guy down so hard that he almost ripped the pad out of his hand, and it's so fast and it's with so much force, and then he just quickly goes and gets the... I mean, just on this one little drill, you can see the difference between Cooper and Hopper. And again, Hopper's going to have a role. We'll see what that is. But oh my good Lord. I mean, it's just the early round guys absolutely stand out. It's funny when they're right next to somebody. You see Cooper and Hopper side by side, and it's like Cooper's a stud. Hopper, he's a football player. I don't know. You watch our first round pick against Monk and the way that they move, and you can just see the, oh my goodness. There was a handoff or a play action pass, I think. You know, it's one of those things where you hand off, and then you go around and you catch the ball. So you kind of hand off and throw. A little bit of that footwork kind of got messed up. They about ran into each other. But that's normal, man. You don't know how to do this stuff yet. You don't know how to do the drops and how the footwork looks and not, you know, the depth and the angles and all that kind of stuff. They got to teach you. It's almost kind of like in a stupid way endearing to me because it's like, oh, look at these guys. They're not ready. We got to get them. We'll get them. But I like it, man. I'm so excited to see Pratt. I really think he's a talented guy. Maybe it's going to take some time, but you know, I mean, I was hyping up Pratt all year. I didn't really think the Packers would take him. I thought he'd probably be like a second round guy, maybe third round, depending on like how early these quarterbacks go. But when the quarterbacks 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 win, and you got Nix and Penix going before the second round, it's like this is a lock second round pick. I was stunned that he fell as far as he did because any place for a smaller school, but you know the stuff I was watching, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter really the competition, maybe the speed, but it's just about anticipation and finding the open guy and throwing an accurate pass. And he was one of my favorites of all the quarterbacks in doing that. He and Bo Nix were probably my two favorite when in that specific trait that I was looking for. So I didn't see anything here with Pratt necessarily yet, aside from this one play where he about ran into his running back. But I'm just very excited. I'm really starting to like these guys, especially the early round guys. You start to see what these guys can do, and it's like, oh my Lord. The other thing that was cool is seeing the coaches out there. Anthony, what the heck is his name? I always called him Campanile, and I remember the defensive coordinator calling him something like Campanile. I think it's Campanile. Anyways, he's out there barking orders and getting excited, and you got the defensive coordinator hands on his knees looking, you know, just watching real close as Campanile is just barking. I mean, he's running the drills and showing him how to do it, and he looked good doing it. But, you know, even as the head coach said, you know, the great thing is these guys just love football and they're passionate about it. And that's so cool to see. And maybe we're just looking at these guys under a microscope more so than what we saw with the other guys. And they were doing this too. But, you know, again, it feels like it fits the culture. And it's weird because we're going in a different direction. You know, I genuinely feel like Brian Gutekunst, among other things, there's a lot of things he's been trying to change. And my daughter just told me there is a bear somewhere outside, so we cannot go outside. We're going to see it. I want to see a bear. Hold on. Update, we did not see the bear. It's been a while, so I'm going to try to remember what the heck I was talking about. But as far as changing the culture, or at least remember what my train of thought was headed, we seem to be, one of the things that he wants to change is just loud, violent aggression. You see that in the draft picks. I mean, even not even necessarily just the players, but think about drafting linebackers in the first and second round over the last couple of years. That's not generally a very smart thing to do. But the linebacker position in and of itself is a tone-setting position for the defense. You get some real hard-hitting linebackers. Can you think of any defense in the history of the world that had just some skull-crushing linebackers that really wasn't a very hard-hitting defense? Maybe. I don't know. When my mind goes to like some top linebackers, I go back to some top defenses and teams that care a lot about defense and defensive culture. But, you know, from the safeties we've drafted, the linebackers we've drafted, you know, going out and getting all these Georgia guys that are athletic freaks, that are champions, that know how to win, all the way down or up, I guess, to the coaches that are just loud and crass, you know. And, you know, I'm excited about it. Anyways, let's take our final break. We'll come back and wrap this bad boy up.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So Marshawn Lloyd is another one, right? I talked about the difference between, you know, our first round offensive tackle and our later round interior offensive lineman. You know, it's just, there's a noticeable difference there. Our linebackers, Cooper and Hopper, there's a very distinct difference watching these guys run these drills. Marshawn Lloyd looks really good. You know, and I think maybe part of this, the issue here is you don't necessarily appreciate one of the top running backs when he's, you know, when you're watching tape on a bunch of guys that are all pretty good running backs. But you think about the guys that we've had. I mean, aside from Aaron Jones, you know, Dylan was drafted mostly because he's massive. And so we see him like destroy the sleds and everything else. Like he just, you know, uses his massive force in kind of cool ways. But as far as just kind of unique athleticism, I mean, even Aaron Jones wasn't drafted very early. So to see sort of the burst and the agility and whatnot that he has, it's just not something I've seen in shorts and a t-shirt in Lambeau Field in a while. And it's noticeable when he's sort of weaving between cones and you don't even really see him weaving. It looks like he's just running in a straight line because there's that little bit of a, you know, that short area agility is so tight. He's just a fun guy to watch. That's all I can say. You know, is he the most elite athlete in the world? No. But he's definitely different than just your average run-of-the-mill undrafted free agent that comes in here and, you know, we appreciate him and he actually looks pretty fast and he actually looks pretty good and it's just, it's noticeable. And there was a no video period, not a lot of notes, but Andy Herman did his best to try to throw out a couple little notes here. He says, nice little route by Dimitri Stanley playing out of the slot. Sold outside, cut back inside, easy separation, and nice hands catch. Playing 7-on-7s right now. Joel Wilson is not Travis Kelce, but really great job of Cooper following in coverage on a deep corner route. Well, I'm glad to hear Cooper lock that down at least. Wes Hodquit says, watching four down linemen with their hand in the dirt in team, going to take a minute for my eyes to get used to that. Yeah, no kidding. It's going to be weird. Dimitri Stanley with a sick one-handed catch in team. We have our tryout rookie minicamp hidden gem of the year. And Matt LaFleur actually talked about him. He didn't mention his name, but they were talking to him about, you know, any standouts or whatever. And he said, yeah, I think he offered it without the question, just saying that some people flashed out there. And, you know, he said, what does somebody have to do to be able to flash? And he said, well, we had a couple guys doing stuff. We had one guy out there with a nice one-handed catch. Well, we know who that is. So the point is, some of these guys that are in tryouts and whatnot are kind of catching the eye of the coaches and might get a shot. We'll see. Wes Hodquit said, Dimitri Stanley, Iowa State wide receiver here on tryout with one-handed snag in team on a play-action pass from Eason. Edger and Cooper fumble return for a touchdown during 11-on-11, says Matt Schneidman. Wes Hodquit says, fumble in team that Edger and Cooper corrals look like Kalen King might have caused it. I wouldn't doubt that. You know why? Because Kalen King comes in like that dude in a mosh pit. You ever seen that? Just the two overhand swing, son of a... Oh, Kalen. No issues for Jordan Morgan trying to block Kenneth Odemegwu, who went with a nice little jump set move, but he shut him down easily. And apparently the fumble, it was Samford wide receiver Rory Starkey that coughed it up. Hate to be harsh, but when your odds are almost zero to begin with and then you fumble, not great. First injury of the 2024 season, Kalen Gervin helped off the field. Wes Hodquit says, rookie minicamp musings. Credit to Dimitri Stanley. Guy had a nice day. I also really like Keyshawn Banks. Powerful guy, looks bigger. Kalen King got works as a nickel. Intriguing spot for the Penn State cornerback. I got no issue with that. And it sounds like there was a rumor that Marshawn Lloyd fumbled it. Like there's a lot of concern about him having fumble issues in college and then he fumbled the ball here. It wasn't Marshawn Lloyd that fumbled it. I don't know why that ever I don't know where that came from, but that's if you heard that and you thought that was the case, that's not the case. It wasn't Marshawn Lloyd that fumbled. Tom Silverstein's thoughts. He says, Packers rookie inside linebacker Edgerrin Cooper rose up fully extended and snatched a purposely thrown high ball with his left hand for a one-handed interception during rookie minicamp. How did everybody else miss that? That's crazy. Matt LaFleur was up at the podium making some comments. I already talked about a couple of his comments. One of the things he said, Stokes looks night and day from where he was a year ago. I love hearing that, but I could swear, and I'm probably wrong, I could swear we heard this last year. Maybe somebody can fact check me on that one. But you know how I am. I don't believe anything until I see it. Cautiously pessimistic. He says, discussions have already started about tryout players. Mentioned Dimitri Stanley's one-handed grab today. Again, he didn't mention him by name, but he talked about a guy with a one-handed grab. LaFleur says linebackers coach Anthony Campanile is showing guys tape of Lawrence Taylor running down on special teams as a flyer. LaFleur said he loves the history of the game and brings the juice. You can tell by watching him coach. I don't know why every coach doesn't just show people Lawrence Taylor highlights. Like before every game, like, hey, this is Lawrence Taylor. Be like this guy. Minus the, you know, smoking crack before games and stuff. Don't do that. But still somehow muster up the same energy that that drugs bring, which might be physically, humanly impossible. But still, be that good. Talking to Oladapo, he says, I was a Packer fan growing up. So that's an awesome little tidbit. Every Packer fan's favorite player, Ketan Oladapo, apparently his favorite team is the Packers. So it was mutual love from the beginning. It was meant to be, man. Anyways, that's about it for that. Last thing I wanted to talk about real quick was Jordan Love is now officially eligible to get his contract extension. Matt Schneidman over at The Athletic took a deep dive look at what to expect for Mr. Jordan Love and his contract. So skipping down quite a ways, he talked to the SpotTrack founder, Michael Gennetti. And here's what he had to say. If we're projecting Love's next contract in Green Bay simply by the numbers, our math says we should be looking at a four-year extension, including $144 million of new money. Remember, it's an extension, so there's the money that's already there, and then $144 of new money with four more years tacked on, which would be $36 million per year. It says, how do we get here? The four most comparable variable contracts include Seahawks' Geno Smith, $25 million a year, Daniel Jones, $40 million a year, Justin Herbert, $52.5 million a year, and Joe Burrow, $55 million a year. Statistically speaking, this provides us a nearly perfect balance percentage change when factoring in a variety of passing and rushing statistics. But it's realistic to assume that Love will be operating on a contract worth $20 million per year less than the top quarterbacks in football, or is that likely? No. First off, the league salary cap increase, which is plus 13.6%, which is massive, should have agents resetting their own expectations. Secondly, Love has already agreed to and half played out a bridge deal. If the contract being offered this time around doesn't reflect upper echelon quarterback pay, Love and his representation are arguably better served to play out the 2024 season under his current contract, which is $11 million, with a high-priced franchise tag of free agency on the table thereafter. I got to say, that's actually a pretty solid argument. You know, if you look at this and say, well, you know, we're comparing you to Daniel Jones, Geno Smith, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and it's like, okay, first off, screw you. You're not throwing in Geno Smith, who's making $25 million per year as a comp, just because he got paid as a low-end rental because he's never been any good, and then he explodes with great stats, and you want to call that a comp. That, listen, bottom line, there is zero chance. So let's just walk through this. They're not done yet, but let's just walk through this, and let's say this was the negotiation. I don't think the Packers would be stupid enough to even offer a $36 million a year. All that's going to serve to do is really piss off Jordan Love and his representation and start that whole feeling of this team doesn't care about its players, right? Like, that's such an insulting offer. That's going to begin sowing those seeds. And as the Packers have learned, you don't want to go there. But from a negotiating standpoint, I mean, if you're talking $50 million a year, so the difference we're talking is about $15 million, you know, between 36 and 50, $15 million per year over 4 years. That's a massive difference. 100%, at the very least, I'm going to threaten and say, you're out of your mind. You're going to raise that number, or we will just play out this season. And then if you don't come in with top of market money next year, we will leave and we will go to a new team. And the Packers don't want to even dabble with that. They've got him right now. I mean, it's similar to the whole Devontae Adams thing, right? They decided, you know what? Let's wait. Let's not give him the new money. Devontae wanted a contract. He said, I'm worth it. Pay me. And they're like, yeah, let's see how it goes. So then it went really well. And the Packers are like, all right, you win. You get the money. And he said, no, screw you. You had your chance. I'm going somewhere else. Again, Packers don't want to play that game. They have to pay him this year. So I guess all I'm saying is I don't expect, again, the Packers are not going to offer him $36 million. If they did, that would be ridiculous. You know, if you want to come in and say, hey, you know, let's just look at some comps here. You know, okay, so if we do this, it's 36. You know, but, you know, he's so good. And, like, we'll pay him more than that. Don't worry about it. But, you know, just to kind of throw it out there, just to kind of, you know, poison the waters a little bit. But the point is, Jordan Love does have that in his back pocket. I mean, his representation has that in his back pocket of it's not what we want, but we can absolutely play out this year. You know he's good enough. He's going to dominate this year, and he will get top of market money. He's going to get maybe $60 million. Because if you think, like, what would who's the top quarterback right now? Who's the top young stud? I guess you could kind of say Mahomes or whatever, but I mean Burrow with his injury issues, Herbert. I don't really know. Whoever it is, today, what would they get? Now imagine after another salary cap increase next year. You don't think we're pushing 60? Maybe we're already at 60. I don't know. Probably are. So that's why I come into this with, you know, expectations of this contract being really high. Because Jordan's playing like a guy that deserves, you know, a resetting number. Because I mean, we've seen, especially at the quarterback position, how many times have we seen guys reset the quarterback market that aren't, they're not even top 10 guys. I mean, Matt Stafford did it when he was, I mean, maybe he was a top 10 guy. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy Garoppolo. He was the highest paid quarterback in football when he went over to, when he left New England. He was like a backup that played two good games. He reset the market. That was it. That's all it took. So I'm just skeptical of all this. Well, he'll get like $45 million. Like, that's it? Bro, if the Packers can pull that off, that's psycho. Because if I'm Jordan Love, it's like, bro, listen, I proved that I can be that dude. You're going to pay me 50, at least. That's the floor. You don't want to pay me 60? Fine, you're going to pay me 50. And if you're not willing to do that, then we'll ride out this season. I will prove that I'm worth 60 plus. And then I'll come back to the table, demand the absolute tippy top from you. And if you do not just immediately say yes, then I will wait until I become a free agent and I will go somewhere else. I mean, how easy is that argument? What the Packers have no leverage at that point. Here I go with the leverage thing. I mean, obviously there's some risk of injury, but it's, you know, whatever. And there's got to be some fear on the other side of, you know, what if things don't go super well, whatever. But again, I'm not asking you for top of market money. I'm giving you a discount. But listen, you know I'm the guy. Let's do this. And you know you're going to structure it in such a way that after, you know, about 2 years, you could probably get out of it. So just give me the money. Anyway, sorry, let's continue. But is it realistic to assume that Love would be operating on a contract worth $20 million less than the top quarterbacks in football? No. First off, the league salary increased 13.6%. Secondly, Love has already agreed to a half-play bridge deal, et cetera, et cetera. And again, I think this whole thing of, well, I came up with $36 million because of these comps are stupid. Geno Smith is a stupid comp. That shouldn't be here. Just because the statistics line up doesn't matter. His contract is a unique situation. He was paid as low as he was because he wasn't paid on this or last year's stats. He was paid on his stats prior to his. You got to look at the contract. I hate to tell this guy how to do his job, but Geno Smith wasn't paid based on the current stats that he has. You got to look at the stats that he was paid for, which is prior to the contract that he got. If you're not going to do that, then we have to adjust Geno's contract to what he's worth today. And then also factor in his age. Same with Daniel Jones and his contract and Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. Like, you can't just look at stats and go, well, let's just look at it and then divide by four. And there you go. There is a number. Come on, bro. The bottom line is if his stats line up with, I mean, even Daniel Jones works because you can bring that to the team because he did get the money. And that's the point. Daniel Jones has never even been good. And they went to the top of market for him, or at least close to it. I mean, Daniel Jones went to 40. Dude's not even that good. Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are close to Jordan Love numbers, and they are top of market. So, I don't know what we're doing here. Honestly, I'm not sure why this was even included. The Gannitti thing. He basically laid out, he came in, he laid out a table, and then he said why his table was stupid, and that was the end. And it's like, okay. Anyways, further down, adjusted projections. If we attempt to adjust our outcome based on logic and reason, that would be nice. It seems that best to begin by stating that Jones's $81 million two-year guarantee should become an absolute floor for any young quarterback looking to step into his next contract. That must be Daniel Jones. It is the absolute floor, because that's a bad quarterback who got a new contract. He says if we adjust what he got paid, which was 18%, to the new salary cap, we're now approaching $46 million per year. That's the floor. He said, absolute floor for any young quarterback looking to step into his next contract. That's just any old Joe. $46 million is the, there are some people projecting Jordan Love gets $45 million a year. And we're looking at a situation here where $46 is the bottom floor for any old piece of garbage that just is just good enough to get a second contract. You can't be pure garbage because you're getting another contract, but that is the absolute floor. Are we saying Jordan Love gets the floor? I understand he only played a year, and he only played well for half a year. I'll tell you right now, if the Packers get him to sign a deal for $45 million a year, and anybody out there still doesn't like Gutekunst and Russ Ball and all those guys, you are stupid. Because in my mind, there's no way. If I'm Jordan Love and his representation, I'm looking at this going, don't even freaking look at me if we're not talking in the 50s. And by the way, I wouldn't mind going a little higher. You come to me with $45 million, I'm going to laugh and walk out. You're out of your freaking mind. Anyways, now if we assume that Love is on track to be a better quarterback than Jones, he is, in that coming years, the numbers need to be adjusted north even more. If we bring Herbert into the equation, a player our math says Love compares quite favorably to, we're now dealing with $113 million guaranteed over 3 years against $224.8 million in cap, or a 19.8% allocation. Adjusted forward, that now becomes $50.5 million, which also just happens to be the total value average salary across Herbert's seven-year contract. In this regard, it's not hard to envision a four-year, $200 million extension for Love. 5 years, $211 million total, including the $151.5 million practically guaranteed over the next three or three and a half seasons. Of course, this kind of guaranteed structure would involve Green Bay shifting away from its rigid, no base salary guaranteed policy, but with most other teams going this route for their blockbuster quarterback, the Packers are likely next to follow suit. And I think that's perfectly, we saw guys cracking $50 million all the way back to when Mahomes did it, 3 years ago? It was a while ago. And granted, it was a huge jump. So I think we kind of regressed a little bit, like, okay, let's calm down with the 50 stuff here. But the fact of the matter is, we crossed this 50 threshold a long time ago. We should be pushing 60 at this point. So again, I'm more than happy with 50. I mean, I'm not happy from the standpoint of how our salary cap is going to have to, you know, absorb it. Which again, it's not, we got to remember, we got to adjust our perceptions of things. It's not as though, oh my good, like, this is awful, we can't do this, we'll never survive. As a percentage of the salary cap, we've been here before. This is not, plus it's not even going to be structured in such a way that it's going to hit at 20%, right? Because it's going to be structured where it's lower now, and then it gets higher next year, but then the salary cap goes up, so the percentage should stay lower over those years. Because remember, if you keep it flat, let's just say you did exactly 50, the percentage goes down every single year. You don't need the percentage to go down every year. You can, I mean, ideally, and I doubt this is how they're going to do it, they would structure it in such a way where it's really low early and then it spikes later. And so you get into the situation where we either have to extend you or cut you. I don't personally like doing it that way. It seems like a fine strategy because it really relieves some tension now, and then we can just kick the can down the road later by either eating some money and dispatching you, or pushing the money out. But the problem is, if you push the money out and the extension, it just adds that money into the next extension. And you're not going to get a discount on the next extension. So it starts to snowball. Can we just frickin' keep the percentages even? I mean, you can't do it perfectly because you don't know how much the salary cap is going to go up, but you can kind of guess. I mean, especially if it's going up like 10% a year. And then if you, you know, miscalculate, fine. Then you get your stupid snowball effect. Congratulations. I just don't know why we got to, like, drag it all the way down to zero year one, then have it, like, at, you know, the percentage you want in year two, and then just spikes out of control after that. It's just so stupid to me. I don't know. But anyways, I mean, again, that's been my thought this whole time in terms of, I mean, all I'm saying is I've seen guys reset the market that do not deserve it, period. I'm not saying Jordan Love necessarily deserves to reset the market. He's played 1 year. But again, Jimmy Garoppolo played 2 games as a backup, and he reset the quarterback market. The idea that Jordan Love wouldn't just be the new top highest paid quarterback, I would be stunned by that. It's the automatic thing. You just go to the top. It's what you do. You are the franchise quarterback. You have shown that you have not just top 10, top 5 talent. You have number one quarterback in the NFL talent. I would absolutely start the negotiations at here's what the top guy gets and it's what we want. Talk to me when you're ready to talk about that. And again, anything below that, I'm happy about, because I just think that's how it goes. So that's where I'm coming from. A lot of people disagree. They're like, well, 45, 42, anything less than that is like, okay. Yeah, dude, if we get 45 million, again, we cracked 50 like what, 3-4 years ago? And we're talking 45 today, which would be the equivalent of what? Back when Mahomes got 50, it's what, like 32 million? Like, what are we doing here? Anyways, I'm going to get out of here. You guys have a good rest of your day. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.